It's the bonus hour, everybody. Welcome aboard. We're thrilled that you're here. Wendy, you're predicting your own illness. You said that tomorrow you don't think you'll be quite yourself.
I just...
You see something coming on, do you?
I feel it.
Do you?
Yeah.
What is it? Do we know?
It's just a cold. The whole newsroom has been sick.
Yeah. It's their lifestyle, though, don't you think? It's the way they conduct themselves. I don't think they take care of themselves.
I'm not going to answer that. I'm not going to slam, though.
Dave Schwann is in there. Schwanny, as he's known affectionately to millions. He just wears a windbreaker. That's it. It's not enough.
We all use
no pants.
The same
he's
control.
Like Winnie the Pooh.
That's not true. And he's not here to defend himself. That's wrong.
That's better. I think it's better that way.
I don't. Shock jock. Really, Dave Ennett sits where you're sitting and Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
So if they are
two of the healthiest people
right,
in the world.
Exactly.
So I'm fine.
I'm sitting where Steve Cochran sits.
Uh-oh.
Where Roe sits.
Uh-oh.
And everybody on the weekend. And podcasters.
Roe has a suit that's made out of antibiotics. I don't know how you go to a tailor and even suggest that, but he's wearing a suit that's made entirely out of antibiotics.
I'm older than Roe, right?
A little bit, yes.
Okay, so I've been a hypochondriac longer. I just don't whine as much.
Right. You keep it more internal. Your hypochondria is more internal. His is more of the, oh my God, I'm going to die any second brand.
Right.
Yes.
I do talk about it, but not, I don't freak about
right.
it.
Right.
But I just feel a cold coming on, and this happens every once in a while, and I start, I swear to God, I double up on my healthy trinity, and it never, like, comes into full-blown cold. So I'm hoping this happens.
Yeah.
When you feel it coming on, I take healthy trinity every day, but I double up on it, and the newsroom was sick.
Jasmine's got the walking pneumonia.
Yes.
She's got the WP.
And my son Michael got sick.
Oh.
And Jim sort of has it. Dylan and I have dodged the bullet, but I just felt it coming on.
What are your symptoms?
Last night, just like I have
are you
chlorine
run down?
In my nose. No, I feel okay. I just and I'm still wondering if it's perhaps the furnace filter on the furnace. I didn't change it yet. I bought a new one yesterday, but I haven't changed it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said to get the top of the line, because there's a hardware store I go to that I enjoy, but there's a lot of pressure put on you when you go in this hardware store. Like, you walk in, and immediately it's like, what are you looking for? And I'm like, furnace filters? Well, it's right. I know where they are. Thank you. I've been shopping here for years.
That's so funny, because that's exactly what I want and need in a hardware store.
Then go to my store.
I need somebody to guide me from the second I walk in the door until I leave, because I don't know what anything does. I don't know where anything is. But you say that's a bad thing. You want to be left alone when you're in there.
Well, you need to judge someone after they've entered the store, because if I look like, where do I go? But if I just walk in and go right to an aisle,
yeah.
I think they should leave me for a moment.
Wow. I want the exact opposite.
That's so weird.
I can't say. I am more lost in a hardware store than if you put me on another planet. Like, on another planet, I would just go, okay, I get it. There's no gravity here. I can't breathe. I'll be dead. I understand this. But in a hardware store, I'm looking around, and I see things that I don't even... You just look in any shelf in a hardware store, and they've got a thing that's shaped like a letter L, and it has a spike on one end, and an end eye. And I'm like, who would even think that they would need one of these, much less they have a bunch of them. But this is amazing.
You don't need it until you need it.
I mean,
really, there are times I don't even know what something is until I need it, and then I go find
right.
it.
Right.
And then I'll gladly ask.
Do you tell the person who approaches you in the hardware store, do you say to them, I'm good, I'll find it?
I have done that yesterday.
How do they react to that? Are they okay with that?
Well, yesterday I didn't know exactly what to do because I was kind of in a hurry, and I needed a filter for our whole house humidifier.
Aisle 16.
And then I needed a filter for our furnace.
Yeah.
And every year, I'm very good at writing notes on my phone, so I know what size everything is.
Mm-hmm.
Every year for the humidifier, it's a whole house one, and I'm not sure the size of the filter. And every year, I question myself. Like, am I getting the right one? I know it's not square. It's rectangular. And there really are only two different kinds. But every year I doubt myself. This year, I swear to God, I've got to write the model number.
Why wouldn't you just buy both, and whichever one doesn't work, just return it the next time you're in the area?
Because it's a pain in the ass to return stuff. It really is. I mean,
but
here's an idea.
But I would think a store like that that's so anxious to help, I would think that they would have a good return policy.
They do, but I don't.
Is this a chain store or privately owned? This sounds great to me.
I love it.
Yeah.
But there are times when I kind of know what I'm doing. Like, I need a filter. I know where it is. I purchased them before.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I will say, no, I'm good. But yesterday I just felt, you know, just play along.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one in here. They need something to do. Fine, I need a filter. And then there's a little chart to tell you if you have an April Air humidifier or a Lennox. And I brought the model number, and the model number on mine didn't match any of the things on the boxes.
No.
But I said, I think it's rectangular. I do this every year. And then the furnace filter, I know, is 20 by 25 by 1. What's your size?
Medium.
You have no idea, do you?
I didn't know I needed a filter until you asked.
Does Terry handle that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just, there's a little trap door. You slide it out, slide it in.
Yeah, that's news to me. I'm glad somebody knows.
Jim is like that too, but that I remember because I get, you know, every 3 months you're supposed to. I got the top of the line because I wanted to protect the air in our house. It
yes.
just removes all these allergens and everything,
and yet half your family is sick. So
I haven't changed it yet.
As soon as you change it, everyone will feel better, I bet. I'm sure.
I hope so. No, once you have it, you have it. But texters have been telling me just get the cheapest ones.
Yes.
And then change it every month.
Oh.
But that's, I'll forget. And they said, no, put it in your calendar and set an alert so it says, hey, change the filter.
Why don't you take a day out of the month, like the 4th, because it sounds like filter, and just call it the filter 4th. And every 4th of the month, you put new filters in anything that needs a filter. Do you have an aquarium?
Not anymore.
Put a filter in. Whatever you think needs a filter. Toasters.
But
blender,
I don't want to do it vacuum. Every month. It's bad enough that every 3 months.
You don't have a good filter service in your area? You could clean up with a good filter service.
I don't know. And then when I use the really cheap ones, our furnace is so powerful that sometimes it sucks the filter into it.
Wow. That's pretty strong. That's very strong.
If you use the cheap ones, they're just so flimsy.
There was a guy who worked in the hardware store that's closest to me. Now, keep in mind, within my area, I've got two big hardware stores, you know, the chains, the ones that you're familiar with, your Handy Andys.
That's been out of business as long as Crafty Beaver
is. No wonder I waited so long in there. So there's two really big hardware stores, and then there's a couple locally owned, non-affiliated stores that probably have the same amount of stuff in their store, even though their store is like 1/80th of the size of the giant store. When you go in there, there's just stuff everywhere. And they know where everything is. No matter what you need, they know exactly where it is. It's amazing. But there was one guy in there that reminded me so much of the throwback guy from a hardware store. Like, one time he said to me, I was explaining what I needed. I'm going, all right, I'm doing this thing where I have a plug and I'm plugging it in, and he's listening and he's nodding the whole time. So then he stops me and he goes, here's what you need to do. And he tells me, he goes, take the cord, take the fuse from the cord. He's telling me this. And then he goes, and then Bob's your uncle, everything's back to new.
What?
And then Bob's your uncle.
You don't have an uncle, Bob.
I don't have an uncle, Bob. But the mere fact that he said that and didn't flinch, like that's what you say in a situation like this when you're explaining something. You say, Bob's your uncle, everything's good as new. I just went, you're the best. Because I don't know what that means when somebody says Bob's your uncle. I know it was a phrase a long time ago when everyone did have an Uncle Bob. Times have changed. But I just love the fact that he didn't even hold back. Like, if I said that to somebody, everybody would call me out and go, what are you talking about, my Uncle Bob? What are you saying?
I have never heard that expression in my life.
That was like a phrase like from the 50s. But he was still saying it like, this is what you say when you're in a situation like this. Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle is a way of saying you're all set or
right.
You've got it made.
Yeah.
It's a catchphrase dating back to 1887 when British Prime Minister Robert Cecil, a.k.a. Lord Salisbury, I love his steaks.
So good.
decided to appoint a certain Arthur Balfour to the prestigious and sensitive post of Chief Secretary for Ireland.
Yeah.
I have never heard that expression, and I wonder if Bertrand has, because
he's trying to make his phrase work, but it's not working.
I'll say the world, yeah. And we're like, what?
That doesn't mean
And he
anything.
Goes, no, people used to say it. I said, never.
I think you know when something is not on the internet, if you Google something and it's nowhere to be found on the internet, it's not a thing.
Exactly.
Because somebody would mention it somewhere. Yeah, Bob's an uncle is a phrase that I think hit its peak. I know you say it started in the 1880s, but I think around the 40s or 50s where people were saying it. But the mere fact that a guy would still say it today and not try to explain himself or apologize or qualify it, that's something.
I have never heard that expression before in my life. And I could spend a day doing a tour of Home Depot, Menards, and Lowe's. Oh, my God.
You like being in there that much?
I just do. There's just so much stuff you don't know that you probably need.
But don't you, when you walk down an aisle at one of those stores, don't you look at stuff and go, what would you use that for? What is that? What do you need that for?
Some of the aisles with the different types of screws and stuff. But really, Bill, everything, I think I would know what everything is used for if I walked down an aisle and you pointed something out. I bet I could tell you what it was used for.
One time, I know how to put up shelves. I'm pretty good at putting up shelves.
You and Jim are so similar.
Can he also?
He is a great shelf putter-upper.
It's probably for the same reason.
Yes.
For display purposes.
Yes.
So you want things to look nice. Your husband, like myself, has this weird affliction to collecting toys. So,
affliction.
So it's recognized. The AMA now recognizes it. So you say to yourself, well, if I hired a guy to put up shelves every time I needed shelves, I'd be broke.
Yeah.
I better learn how to do it myself. So I know how to do that. So one time I was in one of the stores and I bought stuff for putting up shelves. And there's a guy who's working with me because I say, here are the dimensions and I need this kind of a bracket and this kind of a. So he goes, oh, you're going to need a couple of these too. And he gives me two packages of these things that are oblong and have spikes coming out of both ends, but it's not squared off. It's like rounded and shrivelly almost, right? It looks like it's been in the bathtub for too long on both sides. So keep in mind, it's long, and then on both sides, it gets shrivelly towards the end, and then there's spikes coming out. So you got a total of four spikes, two on each side. He goes, you're going to need a couple of packs of these. So I didn't want to seem stupid, but I'm like, I should probably get three or four packs. He goes, no, two's going to be fine for
you. Why didn't you at that moment go?
No idea.
I don't know what these are.
I don't know what they are. I bought them. I still have them.
You haven't used them?
No, I figure at some point if the shelf gets like a little wobbly or something, then I'll
go,
oh, now I know what I need that for. But I did buy two packs. They were they were $2.40 each. Not bad.
See, now I'm the exact opposite. I'll spend the day there and I'll go. And honestly, at all those places, they are so unbelievably helpful.
Extremely. When you can track a guy down.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times where you'll ask a guy and he goes, this is zone six. I'm in zone four. I can't help you. And then you go, oh, all right. Well, if you see this zone six guy, send him by.
I guess you're right. But, you know, I go off peak time, so it's pretty easy to find people.
That's better.
Like, I do all my errands on the way home from work before school gets out, before people get out of work.
Yeah.
So I got, you know, all the helps ready
to
help me.
They want to help you. Yeah.
And I just sit there and go, okay, so here's what I'm going to do. Wondering if you had some expertise on this level. And they'll go, oh, no, Jamie in aisle eight does. Let me bring you to them.
Yeah.
They like escort me around the store. And then I just go, okay, so how do I do this? Okay, let me take a picture of it. This goes where?
Mm.
You don't ask?
It depends, you know.
I want to know what those squishy things are.
If I'm in a hardware store, it's for a reason. I'm not one to just browse, you know, because I'm so out of my element there that I only go if I know specifically what I need and then get it. And then I also go, because I'm not allowed to have sharp objects at the house because I'll hurt myself. So whenever wood needs to be cut a certain way, I don't trust myself.
Well, you don't have a saw, I bet.
I do somewhere. I don't know where it is.
Well, no, for some stuff.
Like an electric saw?
Yeah, you need an electric saw. I don't have one.
No.
Either. So you just tell them the measurements. They do it.
Sometimes I'll go to friends' houses and they'll have a whole area of either their garage or a room devoted to tools. Like they have tons of stuff, and I always think to myself, yeah, there's a workbench.
I wish I had that.
There's things that are adjustable.
Vices.
Yeah. Well, we all have them, Wendy.
No, this is a vice.
I'm not going to fault them for liking chocolate at that point because they're just there to help me. But yeah, I see. My dad wasn't good with any of this stuff, and in our garage we had a really solid workbench with all kinds of little drawers that held.
Yeah, nuts
crazy.
And bolts.
Yes.
Is your dad handy?
No. I think my mom felt that if she bought it for him, because it was either a Father's Day gift or a holiday gift. In my family, there's this common belief that if you give somebody something, they'll figure out what to do with it, and that's always wrong. It never pays off, ever.
It never has paid
never.
Off, yeah.
Never once.
I would love... My grandfather was very handy. My brother was pretty handy.
Really?
When my brother went away to college, it left my mom and sister home. Well, she was actually at college, so it was my mom and me that were left at home. So my brother gave me just a quick little lesson of, here's how you change the light bulb over the garage. Yeah. Here's where the ladders are. So he helped a little bit.
Oh, that's good.
And I had to figure it out. To this day, I still would like to figure things out on myself, by myself. And YouTube is amazing.
I'm sure.
So I look at it, and if it's something I can't do by myself, then I'll call someone.
Yeah.
We
yep.
just got a new patio, and I swear to God, Bill, I was ready to do it myself. I was going to order, and I know that I have
wow.
to dig out a hole, and then you put liner, and then you put pea gravel, P-E-A, and you tamp it down.
Because the first one, you could do.
Right.
I mean, you could. You don't want to, but if it came to that.
So you put pea gravel, and then, that
the
makes you laugh.
Well, sure.
It is funny. But I watched how you do it, and my neighbor said, oh, I have a tamper to tamp it down, and I said, oh, cool. And then I realized there is just no way between these heavy bricks.
Right.
I could have done it,
nah.
but it would have taken me 3 years.
Right.
I would have done a little here, a little there.
No, get a professional.
And I watched the crew doing it,
yeah.
and I was like, hey, yeah, this is next. That's how, good job, guys.
What is a damper?
A tamper.
What is
you
that?
You have to tamp. You dig a ditch basically in your yard below where you want the patio to be.
Yeah.
And you put, like I said, a layer of pea gravel.
Yeah.
And some sand. And
did you know that part you just said where you have to layer it that way? Did you already know that?
Well, I
you
looked it up on
oh,
YouTube.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So to tamp it, they have like a big machine that they just kind of push around like a lawnmower, and it just it tamps it down so it's like pressed down really hard.
And you had that tool in
no.
your
in, no?
no? I didn't I wouldn't I, think you would.
But you can rent all this
oh.
stuff.
Oh.
So I thought for a minute I was going to do it for myself, and then I thought, you know
no.
what? No.
No.
I'm not going to do that.
No. I don't blame you. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break, and then as a holiday treat to everybody, Eric Rung will stop by. That's when you know it's Christmas, when you get a visit from Eric Rung. He'll give you the news next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Earlier, Wendy was all over Steve Bertrand for giving the wind chill factor. I'm glad you didn't give the
oh,
wind chill
no.
factor. You don't want to aggravate.
Well, I heard that.
Yeah.
I don't want to
no.
get on Wendy's bad side.
No, you
I
don't
know
want
better
that.
Than that.
All right, you couldn't get on my bad side, first of all, Eric. Bertrand, very easy for
comes
him to
comes built in
do.
With Steve.
You know what Tim McGill said
what?
Over at WGN TV today
what?
Is that we are getting temperatures that we should be getting in January.
But
now.
Okay, but all I'm going to say is that might change. January may be better. I mean, you just don't know.
I would take a better January
yeah.
over a good November.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so get it out
too.
Of the way now,
yes.
you're
yeah,
saying.
Absolutely.
All right. That's fair. Can we discuss something that you're doing over on WGN TV tonight?
Absolutely.
One of your reports.
Yes.
Tell everybody what's coming up, because this sounds really interesting.
Okay,
right?
So this fall, I was in Berlin, Germany, and I spent a week there. And I did a story and interviewed several people about the anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, which is 30 years ago on Saturday. So I interviewed a professor over there that his general studies in his whole life has been basically studying East Germany and the fall of the Berlin Wall. I talked
yeah.
to him, and then I also spoke with some Chicagoans that just happened to be there when the wall came down, which extremely exciting. This one guy that I met, he was fantastic. He's a librarian now over at DePaul University, reference librarian of all things. Mm-hmm. But he went on this grand tour after graduating from UIC, and he spent 2 years in Rome, 2 years in Paris, kind of doing odd jobs, teaching English, that kind of thing. And then he said, well, where should I go now? And he said, well, how about West Berlin? Mm-hmm. West Berlin at the time, as you know, David Bowie was there. I mean, it was a happening place.
Yeah.
It was this island of freedom in otherwise just a oppressive state of East Germany. And so he went there, spent 6 years there before the wall came down. He went and took a nap that night, November 9th, 1989, after work. He woke up, and one of the people that he was living with in this common house said, hey, oh, by the way, the wall came down. He said, wait a second. I just went to sleep for a half hour. You told me the wall came down?
Right.
And so then they ran to the wall, and he just explained his experiences. We had that piece. We ran that Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then tonight we're having a piece on, now there is a generation that has grown up not ever knowing a divided Germany, not ever knowing a divided city, not knowing the Berlin Wall. So I asked them, are the lessons that we learned, do you still connect with them? Do you understand the, you know, how important and life-changing and historic this event really was? Does it still impact you? Do you think about it? And it was interesting. I just happened to find two women in this business. It's always better to be lucky than good. Found two women that were 29 years old. And so they were born the year that the wall came down.
Yeah.
And they were really interested. They were interesting to talk to because they said, you know, it was always just kind of almost a chapter in a book to us for a while. But now it's in the news again. We're hearing about walls, not just in the United States, but also in other countries in Europe, talking about securing their borders there. And they said, you know, it's sad because it just seems like we're taking a step back when we hear and hear this kind of talk about walls. But it was an amazing experience. The Berlin Wall has always fascinated me growing up.
So it's included when German children go to school and they're taking history classes, it's included, right?
Yeah.
They're talking
absolutely
about the history of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
But again, it's kind of like, you know, my parents talking about the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get it. I understand the relevance of it and I understand the historic value in it. But it's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To say, I remember distinctly when I was a kid watching Peter Jennings in front of the Brandenburg Gate reporting and telling me how important this was, how big of a moment in history this was. And it always stuck with me and it always has. And it's always fascinated me. And it was such a thrill to be able to go over and do these stories.
Yeah.
How old were you when you mentioned you remembered Peter Jennings saying that?
I'm six.
You had to be very young.
Hold on. You're making me do math. I don't do math. 13.
But right then and there is, I'm sure, when you decided you wanted to be a journalist.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was a huge impact on my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I still remember him in that trench coat.
Yeah, right. He did.
Yeah.
That was
God, I miss him. Miss him all the time.
He was so good.
He was so good. And here's another interesting story about Peter Jennings that night that I read years later. And you can find this on the internet, but at the end of the broadcast, he asked his executive producer, he said, give me 90 seconds. I just need 90 seconds. And they said, okay. And he then was scribbling some notes. And then he went on just almost like a monologue, 90 seconds to describe the importance of that moment.
Oh, nice.
And the executive producer said later, he said, you know, he had been writing that his whole life. You know, like, I mean, that was just part of who he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he knew that this moment was going to come once that wall went up, and he already knew it. He was just that good in explaining it to people as well.
Do you remember how during 9/11, and you didn't realize it at the time, or I didn't anyway, Peter Jennings comes on ABC and is telling what's going on, or what, you know, they were trying to piece everything together on 9/11. Nobody knew exactly what was going on. But there he was in the anchor chair talking about it, and then he was still there, and then he was still there, and he was still there. And I think he must have done 16 or 18 or even 20 hours straight where he just didn't leave the chair.
Right.
He was just there telling the story.
Yep.
Amazing.
And what's amazing is, as you were saying that, I was just looking up Peter Jennings because I forgot he was a smoker. And I remember when they said he was diagnosed with lung cancer, that surprised me because I had no idea.
Yeah.
And he said he quit smoking 20 years before, but he admitted starting again after the September 11th terrorist attacks. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
And you had just said that as I was reading it.
Yeah.
He was so classy and so handsome and so good.
Oh, God, he was
He really had everything going for him.
Is he from Canada originally?
Yeah.
He was, right?
Yeah. The other thing I remember about, I was actually working September 11th, so I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of the coverage, but I do remember a couple of moments from that day when he almost lost it, but he kept it together and he just said, you know, now is the time when we all need to call our children and tell them how much we love them. And his delivery of that, God, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. I mean, he was just incredible.
Do you remember and I don't know that you saw this. I hope you did, Eric, but it was such an important part of the story. After September 11th, all the shows, all the late night talk shows kind of stopped because some of them emanated from New York. Even the ones in Los Angeles, though, to be respectful, they just didn't do shows for a while. And the first one back was Letterman, and one of his first guests was Dan Rather.
Oh, that's
Letterman
amazing.
Was on CBS. Dan Rather was the anchor on CBS. So he had Dan Rather on to talk not just about what was happening in September 11th, but about how the media, most specifically CBS, was covering it. And Dan Rather got so teary-eyed and just, he was mid-sentence talking about his experience that day, and he stopped talking. He couldn't talk anymore. And then he kept apologizing to David Letterman, and David Letterman said, oh, no. He goes, you're a news journalist, but you're also a human being.
Yeah.
Perfectly acceptable. What a strong moment that was.
It was, and no one knew how to continue life after that day. That's where it was, where all the shows, it didn't feel right to laugh for a while. Right. Yeah. It really didn't.
I don't know, do you remember when Saturday Night Live came back? Because that was right in the middle of the season when September 11th happened.
Yeah.
And I think they may have taken 2 weeks off, and then they came back.
With Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah. And it was...
When we used to like him.
A completely different Rudy Giuliani, and
isn't
I don't think
though?
That's being biased at all as a journalist. I mean, he was a completely different person then.
100%.
Yeah, but that was a very powerful moment as well.
Who just said, was it Trevor Noah who just said a week or so ago, remember when Rudy Giuliani was the guy who guided New York out of the worst possible time? Who's this guy? I just saw that like about a week ago.
I just heard that too, and now I can't remember who it was.
I think it was Trevor Noah.
Yeah, it could have been.
So when you were a kid, were you watching either anchors or reporters or both and kind of in your head just going, okay, I like what he's doing. I like what she's doing. That's what I got to do at some point.
I always say that I blame my father for the line of work that I've chosen because he would come home from work and I would want to hang out with him. And he'd come home from work and he'd watch the news.
Want to watch the news. Get away from me, Eric. I got to watch the news.
No, that's not what it was at all. It was like, you know, you can watch the news
with me.
Yeah. And
that's
so
cool.
We would watch, we'd watch the evening news, then we'd watch the local news.
Mm-hmm.
And on Sunday, we'd watch Meet the Press, and then we'd watch 60 Minutes together. I'd wake up on Sunday morning, and after we read the comics, I would point at articles in the paper, and he'd read them to me.
That's excellent.
Yeah, I mean...
At the time, you might not have known how excellent it was, but at some point, you know, that was excellent.
Well, I also remember when I was a kid... I mean, this is the only thing I ever wanted to do in my entire life was be a reporter. And I do remember watching 60 Minutes and just being in awe of how they could match the words with the pictures.
Yeah.
It just amazed me as a child. Mm-hmm. And I would just watch and watch and watch. And I still am a news junkie. I still watch constantly, but...
When I was really little, we would watch the news every night. And I mean, when I was really little, like 3 and 4 and 5, I would sit there with my parents and watch the news. And the thing that I like most, and I know this is probably lost on you, you don't even know this, but Chet Huntley and David Brinkley would close out every newscast with just this, "Good night, Chet. Good night, David," like that. And I would say it along with them. I'm like, if Chet and David are saying good night to each other, I'm in on this
one. Yeah, you got to get in on that.
That was like part of the day, part of the ritual of the day was Chet and David saying good night to each other.
Yeah.
That was very common, though, when we were growing up, but I didn't watch like the network, the national news. It was mainly just our local news.
Yeah.
With Fahey Flynn and his bow tie, Joel Daly.
The Eyewitness News team.
Yeah, they were great.
Were you living here? Are you from here?
No, I grew up
somewhere else.
Yeah, I grew up in Des Moines.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did they have news there? Totally kidding.
There was no news at all in Des Moines, Iowa.
Zero. No, I mean, we play much higher than the size we are market-wise just because we're such a huge political town with the caucuses every 4 years. And I mean, Iowa is the center of the political world. So, you know, we have a lot of really good journalists in Iowa, especially at the Des Moines Register, which is now just a shell of a paper that it once was when I was growing up.
That's sad.
But I mean, their political team was phenomenal.
Yeah. It's strange how Iowa plays such an important role in the election because there's so much at the forefront, and it's always been that way. I don't
Why
know the story.
Why did they choose
I have
Iowa?
No idea. Do you know?
I don't know exactly how it got picked first, but I know they are going to hold on to it
forever.
Forever. Yeah. I mean, when I remember there was a couple of states that were talking about moving theirs up because they wanted to have more importance, and Iowa said, we'll hold it on January first if you want us to. We don't care. We're going to be first. They said that. They would.
Wow.
They would move it to the first.
Wow.
So they're not going to give that up.
I get it. It's
huge. I mean,
it's
huge for
Iowa. It's a very important thing for them.
But it's also, I think, good because you have the East Coast, you have the West Coast, and then you have what a lot of people on the coast call flyover country, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and so I think it's a great place to start because you have your politicos on each coast that in your big money donors and all that stuff, and then you've got Iowa.
Right, right.
And I think it's a good bellwether for where the country is.
Makes sense. One other question along the same lines. Was there a journalist, was there a reporter that you were watching as a kid and just saying to yourself, I want to do not just what he or she is doing, but I want to do it that way. They're so good. Their style is so good. That's the person I have to go and follow.
Oh, I mean, it's Peter Jennings, but I've got a whole list. I mean, Peter Jennings, Steve Croft, I think is amazing.
Yeah, he's good from 60 Minutes.
Yeah, he just retired. He actually just retired. This is the first season that he hasn't been on.
He's
but
great.
But Steve Hartman from CBS News is one of the best writers I have ever heard.
Yeah.
Oh,
business.
I know Steve Croft. Sorry. I had to look at his picture.
Yeah. He was probably on 60 Minutes for 25 years, wasn't he?
Yeah, I can't remember. I don't recall. He's been on there for decades.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah. He wasn't one of the originals, but he was dang close.
Right.
I think he was the first one that wasn't an original.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wendy, there wasn't anybody like from an interviewing side that you were doing that with, was there? Or was maybe there was.
What do you mean?
Was there somebody that was an interviewer that you just went, wow, they're so good. When I eventually do this, I can learn from this guy or
no,
this girl.
No, I was more into the radio end of things.
The musical end?
Yeah. So I loved Sky Daniels and Dr. Demento and John Landecker.
Yeah.
Patty Hayes was amazing.
Yeah. It's a strong roster.
Yeah. So I was more into the radio, but I knew by, you know, probably seventh grade I wanted to be in radio. But then radio changed, you know. Spinning tunes, because I loved music. I thought this was great. But then getting into the talk end of things, I felt like I had a chance to make a difference every day. I never do, but I had the chance to. And you were you're a film major, so you were going to be a director.
Screenwriter, I was hoping for.
There's still time, Bill.
I know. I'm not giving up.
There you go.
But why did you change from that to stand-up comedy? And I'm glad you did, because you're so funny.
Oh, that's nice of you. It was out of just ease. I know that sounds lazy,
but it came naturally
for
you.
But it wasn't like a job like this. I get that it's a job, but it never seems like a job.
Right.
If you're doing it right, it doesn't seem like
a
job.
That's if you're doing it right.
Well, people have told me. People in the building have told me it's not a job, but I go, oh, it's a job. It's a huge job. So yeah, it just, when I started doing it, it was easy to begin with, and it got easier as time went on, and I enjoyed it enough to keep with it. So I don't know.
And that's it. I mean, I always like to talk. So it's like, okay, where can I?
Mm-hmm.
I got to pick a job where I can talk, listen to music, and make a living.
Right.
Because I hadn't done radio since college before I came here, because I just stayed in TV.
Yeah.
And I got here and I forgot how much I love radio.
Radio's awesome.
Because we get to just sit there and talk about stories. I don't have to, you know, keep it in a minute and a half or whatever. We could just sit here and have a discussion about it.
It's not scripted.
I forgot how great that is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still reporting. It's still journalism.
Right.
But it's just different. And it's a different form and it's more freeing.
Yeah. And I think they get to know you better. It's weird because on TV, of course, it's more visual and they get to see you, and that there's points there. But on this end of it, where it's so freeform, they kind of get to know you better, for better or worse. Maybe
if
that's
you
good.
Allow them to.
Right.
There are some people that are still very guarded about their personal life and stuff. But
Ryan Burrow.
You always pick on him.
He deserves to be picked on.
Although, Eric, he doesn't pick on you when you're not
I
here.
I don't know.
No, what I it appreciate is. That.
Maybe for your birthday.
Well,
maybe,
man.
Maybe.
But fingers crossed.
The invention called Facebook, it was pretty cool for me to find out more about your local newscasters that you've been watching, you know?
Sure.
I love Allison Rosati. We're exactly the same age.
Yeah.
We were born on the exact same day, the same year. And it's like, you look at her Facebook posts and it's like, oh yeah, she has kids and one plays football. And it's just, it's really cool to find out the behind the scenes. Cause otherwise, you wouldn't find that out really unless you were at an event she was at.
Well, they push that too. I mean, that's what they like to see on social media is, you know, our personal side as well as news.
But you know, it's funny, like for radio, prior to the internet existing, if you listen to somebody on the air, you really had to do some work if you wanted to know what they look like because they were just on the radio.
That's when the stalking laws came about.
That's right. That was the beginning of that. But now, I mean, it's so easy if you hear somebody and you go, I'm curious as to know a lot more about them, including what they look like and what they like to have for lunch. You just go online and it's, you know,
it's
a
all
second
there.
Later, right, there it is. Yeah. Yep.
Someone has texted. We were talking about the Berlin Wall, which Eric Rung is doing part two of a special report this evening.
Tonight.
WGN TV News. 630 says, my mom escaped East Berlin through the wall. It had nothing, all caps, to do with keeping a border secure. It was to keep people in like a cage.
Yeah, that's
true,
exactly what it was. Yep. And they used the East German government used the lie in propaganda to say, no, we're protecting you from the capitalist West. They want to take us over.
Mm.
And even up until the end, East Germany had plans on the next version of the wall. Like, even in 1989, they were planning on continuing a new version of the wall. They still had plans in place to take over West Berlin.
Wow.
That was always the goal, even all the way to the end. And here's the other thing that's really fascinating about this is that, you know, Reagan gets a lot of play because of his Mr. Gorbachev. Tear down this wall and that. And the interesting thing about this is it was not politicians per se, not even per se. It wasn't politicians that brought the wall down. It was people that risked their lives in East Germany that got up and protested despite the secret police and despite the government and its heavy hand and said, we're not going to do this anymore. And you have to remember also at this time, there was democracy just really sweeping Eastern Europe at this time. You had Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, all starting to want democracy and freedom. And once they saw that starting to happen in a lot of those other countries and the Soviets not coming in with tanks and trying to quash these protests, that's when they said, we have our chance. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And these protests had started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And not only in East Germany, but also in East Berlin. And these people, I mean, I can't stress this enough, risked their lives for this to happen.
Yeah.
East Germany recognized the fact that they, could not hold this back anymore. That's when they decided to, we're going to lift the travel restrictions. Now, the interesting part about how that happened is there was a guy named Gunter Sabatsky, who was part of the East German Politburo at the time, and it was an evening press conference, and he was going to announce these travel restrictions being lifted. So he was handed the paper. He just read it. A West Berlin reporter asked him, well, when are these new policies about free travel, when did they go into effect? And he said, I guess immediately.
Oh, wow.
And some people say that it was either a mistake or he intentionally said that because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's kind of up in the air as far as if it was a mistake or not. But after that, thousands of people started heading to the border to see, all right, well, let's see if this is true.
Right.
What was supposed to happen was this was supposed to be laid out over a couple of weeks, even months, and they were still supposed to get visas in order to travel, but there were so many people that were at the border
but
that they had to open them up.
But somebody could have stopped it if they did it that way. Somewhere along the line, somebody could have put a
exactly.
stop on
and,
it.
And there were still some people that were very cautious because at any point, at any time, the Soviets could come in and say, nope, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
Go back to your house.
That's fascinating. Yeah. We'll watch more tonight at 9 o'clock WGN TV. Good work.
Thanks for talking to me.
Appreciate it. That's Eric Rung. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll close things off. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Good night. Good night.
Just stuck with my flute lessons. I could have played along with this.
Don't you regret that every day that you stopped your flute lessons?
And I wish I would have taken squeeze box lessons.
Yeah.
The accordion.
Yeah. I knew. Believe me, there's no bigger accordion fan on the planet than me. Who's your favorite accordion player of all time?
Frankie Yankovic.
Good call.
It's the only one I know.
I'd go Myron Florin.
Vlasta?
She's in the top 10. Definitely top 10.
I don't think there are 10.
Have you been to the Accordion Walk of Fame in Pennsylvania?
No.
Wendy, treat yourself.
I would imagine it wouldn't be a very smooth walk. Wouldn't you trip over the...
Yeah, there's that. Yep. I'm not saying it's not without fault. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We greatly appreciate it. And then tomorrow, as it turns out, I'm looking at the schedule. We've got a whole show tomorrow, too.
And isn't it Friday?
Yes.
Oh.
Can't beat that. See you tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Batman.
West from Chicago, this is WGN at AM 720 on your radio and on smart devices anywhere just by saying play WGN radio on TuneIn.
WGN Chicago,
a Nexstar Media Group station.